Hey friends, it's Fred Greenhalgh, producer here at Realm. A new episode of Ominous Thrill is ready for your ears. It's Advice After Dark. Late night radio host Belladonna delivers extreme advice to the delight and horror of her audience until a creepy listener forces her to confront the brutal consequences of her show. Here's a preview.
Welcome to my live stream, Bella. Say hello to everyone.
What do you want?
Click the link. Watch along.
I'm not clicking links from psychos.
You put that trash on the radio every night and I'm the psycho?
You sound like you need help.
I'm not one of your fake callers. My show is very, very real. Do you want to know what it's called?
No, I don't.
It's called Belladonna Gets What's Coming. Starring you.
What?
It's really starring me, but it's all about you. And you'd be surprised how many people want to watch you get what's coming.
I called the police. They'll be here any minute.
Yeah, well, we should be done before they get here.
Find Ominous Thrill out now, everywhere you listen.
Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
My name is Reed Ebel, and I am a survivor of Camp Morgan. I've held onto this story for 22 years, unsure when or if I'll get the chance to share it. But the doctor just told me the cancer's progressing. I don't have much longer to live. Camp Morgan hosted weekend sleepaway camps for kids and teenagers. It offered classes and workshops, teaching outdoors and survival skills. It was basically like a truncated Boy Scouts. I can't say I felt particularly excited to go, but my parents convinced me. I was 12 years old with video games as my only real hobby, so I guess they thought Camp Morgan would benefit me. I convinced my friend Dante to talk his parents into sending him too. Obviously, I had no idea what would happen. Obviously, I would not have invited Dante if I had known. I still feel guilty about it, though. Dante was a cunning young man. He heard sleepaway camp and immediately agreed to go if I would help him convince his girlfriend Robin to go too. So, that's how I ended up owning the guilt of not just one, but two lost kids, presumed dead, certainly gone forever. Well, I can already sense myself wanting to delay telling about what happened at the camp, so I'll stop beating around the bush. You don't need to know about the goodbyes to our families, the bus ride in, the introductions from Camp Leader Sue, counselors Hallie and Josh, or Chef Cal, who we met in the kitchen on our tour of the facilities. If you've ever been to a campground like that before, I bet you can picture all the grubby but charming buildings, the stinky bunkhouses, the even more rank outhouses. Trust me, you don't want to know any more about those. Let's begin at the bonfire the counselors held that first night. Josh sang while Hallie played guitar. They apparently only knew stuff by the Goo Goo Dolls and the Beatles. The 20 or so of us roasted s'mores and hummed along to the choruses we knew. At one point, we all became hypnotized. It was during the inexplicably saddening Yellow Submarine. As Josh sang about staring out a portcullis at endless waters, I turned my gaze toward the endlessness above. The stars out there made me feel something tough to explain. I felt my own irrelevance, which is a tough thing to convince any 12-year-old boy of, but I simultaneously felt that myself and all my fellow campers mattered so much. Enough of that. While I was staring at the stars, I noticed a glimmer. I wouldn't call it a light, not like you see on the bottom of a jetliner at night. It didn't have that artificial electric quality. No, this light looked more like a shining reflection in a mirror, the brief flash on the wall when a car outside catches the sun. The pinpoint of light grew into a beam while expanding outward. This all happened in less than a second. Then we all heard a crack like lightning, and the light disappeared. The sound gained everyone's attention. Josh, lost in song, didn't notice we had all been distracted until Hallie stopped playing to see what we were looking at. Josh's phone rang, and he answered, "Hey, Sue." "Yeah, no, we heard it over here too." "No, I don't think it was a gun. An explosion? Sure, I guess." "We will." "Okay, bye." Hallie asked, "Was she asking about that sound?" "Yeah, she wanted to make sure we didn't do something." "Did she see the light?" I asked. Everyone looked at me. I wasn't prepared for that. "There was a light," I mumbled. Someone suggested a comet might have landed nearby. That would have explained both the light and sound, I supposed. It was a good enough explanation to allow everyone to resume roasting and singing. It was good enough for me. Two forest rangers stopped by the next morning while we ate breakfast. Camp leader Sue beckoned Josh to follow her, leaving Hallie and Chef Cal, he was really just a college student, to watch all 20 of us kids. Sue and Josh were outside with the rangers for so long, Cal put us to work cleaning the chow hall and kitchen. I, tasked with sweeping the chow hall, conveniently found myself near Cal and Hallie when Sue and Josh returned. I overheard them saying the rangers were investigating the sound we all heard the previous night. Apparently, the forest rangers also thought it was probably a meteor. Hallie asked, "So what took you all so long? Did Josh forget his directions again?" Josh laughed flirtatiously. Sue said, "Oh, they were just being cautious and telling us about every little report that anybody's made around here." Josh said, "Some hunters recorded really weird animal noises coming from the area after that thing crashed down." "What kind of animals?" Cal asked with nervous intrigue. "Not sure. They played us one of the recordings, but the quality sucked." Hallie asked, "Are we safe here?" Before Josh responded, he caught my eyes. He smiled big and waved, saying, "Hey buddy, that floor's looking great." After that, the counselors and chef took their conversation elsewhere. They split us kids into three groups. I got separated from Dante and Robin, but Dante spoke up and requested I be traded into his group. On the schedule, we had one workshop before lunch and two after. Each group would rotate between workshops, so by the end of the day, everyone would have gotten to try everything. Plant identification, bird sighting, and canoeing were the workshops for that day, and I took them in that order. Plant identification taught me all the ways I could accidentally kill myself in the woods, and bird sighting almost put me into a post-lunch coma. But canoeing woke me back up. I was assigned to a canoe with a kid I didn't know, because Dante obviously wanted to go with Robin. What's more romantic than paddling out on a lake as the evening breeze sweeps in, right? My canoeing partner, I feel terrible that I never learned his name, suddenly told me to stop paddling and shushed me. I looked back at him, sloshing the canoe as I turned, and he pointed toward his ear. He gave up his silence a few seconds later, saying, "Sorry, I thought I heard an animal or something. I heard the counselors talking about animals getting displaced by the meteor? I heard them too," I interrupted. He smiled bashfully. "I feel bad for spying, but I wanted to know more about what that thing was last night. Did you see it?" "Yeah," I said. "I thought I was the only one." His expression warmed. "Me too. Did you see the way how the light, like its tail or whatever, got wider? I was gonna say how it looked like a portal." I paused at that, trying to recall the light in detail. My partner continued, "It looked like space just sort of opened up, you know? Like something got... Do you watch Star Trek? Like something got beamed here from another world. Yeah, I don't know. That sounds too sci-fi for me, I said, forcing a laugh. He replied, Yeah, well, a lot of science fiction becomes reality, you know. What is that? A girl screamed. It was Robin. She was clinging to Dante and pointing across the lake. All eyes followed her finger. We all witnessed science fiction become reality. Standing on the opposite bank in the shade of a pine grove, a tall, slender figure that almost appeared to be coated in birch bark watched us. It must have been 7 or 8 feet tall at least. The shadows hid any distinct features, but we all felt its gaze upon us. Josh pushed through shock and ordered, Everybody back to the shore, now! Paddle straight to the bank, go! Paddles floundered, canoes twisted this way and that as adolescents in various states of panic attempted to flee. My partner and I were the furthest out, but we quickly caught up. I aimed us toward Dante and Robin, who were having trouble paddling straight. Look out! Someone screamed. At the edge of the group, an abrupt splash made everyone look. Next to Josh and the kid he had with him, a murky gray creature with skin like a slug's burst from the water. It arced over Josh's canoe, enveloping him and the kid with him like a wave. A second splash, much closer to me, stole my attention away before I could see what happened to Josh. This splash caused another canoe to overturn. A second amorphous blob wrapped over the top of the kids who fell in the water. Then they were gone. Robin, come on, I heard Dante pleading. Dazed myself, I saw Robin had completely frozen, locked up with terror. Only then did I notice my partner had also turned to stone. Hey, I shouted, trying and failing to wake him. Ours were the last two canoes and probably still 20 good strokes from shore. I shouted to Dante, Swing over here, I'll help you. I planned to jump onto his canoe and help row he and Robin to safety. Next to my friends, my nameless partner bore no significance to me. Sorry, friend. With his paddle, Dante pulled the noses of our canoes together. I stood, ready to leap, but stopped. I almost lost my balance and fell in. Behind you, I stammered, pointing over Dante's shoulder. He spun around, holding his paddle up like a spear. One of the gray slug creatures was slithering through the water toward his and Robin's canoe. I yelled at Dante to get in my canoe instead, but he wouldn't leave Robin. As the alien thing closed in, we drew our canoes all the way together. He and I hoisted Robin into mine. Her impact caused the two canoes to drift apart before Dante could jump. Like in slow motion, I watched the giant slug thing burst from the lake's surface. It stretched out, expanding like a parachute. With the sun to its back, the light shone through its semi-opaque body, if you could call that shapeless form a body. I could see thin capillaries running all throughout it and one enormous organ located near the center. I did not see the moment the monster enveloped Dante, because at the same time it leapt at him, a second unseen creature caught my partner's paddle and yanked him in. The force of this overturned our canoe, and we all went in the water. When I surfaced, my overturned canoe was right next to my head. I ducked down to hide in the air pocket under the canoe and made Robin scream when I popped up there. She, too, had managed to escape the second alien sneak attack. My partner, apparently, had not. Shh, shh, be quiet and stay still, I commanded in a whisper that echoed amongst the trickles inside the boat. What are they? Asked Robin. I shook my head to show I didn't know. Where's Dante? I shook my head again, although I felt I did know the answer to that question. I just couldn't admit it to myself or to her. We waited there, bobbing in that cold chamber for many long minutes before either of us felt safe enough to look out. I finally braved a peek. I surfaced behind Dante's empty canoe, which may have saved my life. The tall creature we had all seen across the lake was now on our side, leaning over the water to pick something up. Holding my breath so I could sink to my eyeballs in the water, I watched the stooping, skeletal creature lift one of the gray things out of the water. It did not strain at all when picking up the enormous blob. No, the slug seemed to bond with the other creature. Parts of it attached to the other's arms like a skin. As the tall creature stood, lifting the blob, I could see the silhouettes of two children curled up inside it. They did not look like they had been eaten, but rather tucked away. It captured them, I thought. I ducked back underwater when a second skeletal monster emerged from the trees and plodded toward the water. I hid back under the canoe with Robin for a long time. I only left again when I began to fear one or both of us might go into hypothermia. I didn't know the name of that particular diagnosis back then, but I knew my frozen limbs and the icy feeling in my spine could not be good long term. My second foray outside made me feel safe enough to bring Robin out too. No skeletal aliens or slug monsters were anywhere to be seen. Sadly, neither were Dante, Josh, or any of the other campers. Robin and I crept back to the campground where we hoped we would find Sue, Callie, and the other campers waiting. They were probably all wondering why we were late for dinner, I guessed. But on our return, we found only empty buildings with one exception. Cal was in the kitchen keeping the food hot. He had no idea anything was amiss until Robin and I came in, cold and soaking wet. We explained what happened at the lake, and Cal, understandably dubious, went outside to look around. When he realized absolutely no one else had returned from any of the workshops yet, he called Sue. "There's no signal for some reason," he said, holding his phone up above his head. He laughed. "Maybe the aliens are jamming my signal." "That's not funny," Robin said, melting into tears. Cal looked a little sorry, but I could tell he still thought Robin was just being dramatic. "Her boyfriend, my friend Dante, was one of the kids those things caught," I explained. "Guys, seriously, is this a prank?" Cal asked.
"No, it's real and it's actually happening and you need to protect us," Robin cried.
A new seriousness overcame the chef. Whether or not he believed our story, he believed Robin's tears. He understood that something bad had happened to us.
"Okay, okay," he cooed. "Let's all get in my car and drive over to the other stations, yeah? If something actually attacked the camp, maybe there's more people hiding out there."
Robin sobbed.
"I can't go back."
I was glad she said it so I didn't have to. I wasn't ready to venture back out from relative safety. I wanted to call my parents to come pick me up and take me far, far away. That gave me an idea.
"Cal, I'll stay here with Robin so we can call her parents to come get her. We can use the landline in the kitchen," I said.
Cal nodded, his eyes saying he understood my true motive. He told us he would be back in 15 minutes and to call the forest rangers if he wasn't. "There's a number on the magnet by the phone," he said. "I'll be back in a flash." But Cal was not back in a flash. We heard his car start, heard his tires spit gravel, and received no further signs of life from Chef Cal. To this day, I don't know exactly what happened to him out there, only that he never returned to the chow hall. Robin and I didn't realize at first how long it had been since Cal left because we were busy trying to make the phone work. All we ever heard was a fuzzy dial tone on the other end. I ate some of the food Cal had prepared for dinner. My full stomach helped reduce some of my anxiety. That's why I tried so hard to convince Robin to eat. She was a wreck.
She felt certain those things had killed Dante. Losing Dante cut me deeply, but unlike Robin, I had the strangest feeling he was still alive. Everyone, actually. I felt they were all still alive. The way I had seen their bodies folded up inside that translucent creature, they looked like babies in a womb awaiting birth. I could have been totally misinterpreting what I had seen, but I felt that our friend, the other kids, and the counselors had all been captured, not killed. And that meant they needed a rescue mission. Not from us, no. Robin and I were just a couple of kids who had gotten lucky. Twice. If we'd gotten in that car with Cal, we would have ended up with everybody else.
"What's even happening?"
Robin whimpered. I realized I had been lost in thought for a while, and she probably wanted me back. I was all she had left. I said, "I have no idea. I'm guessing whatever we heard crash last night was those monsters. Maybe it was like their ship or something."
"You think they're aliens?"
Robin asked, sounding both skeptical and repulsed.
"I don't know what else they could be," I admitted. "So how are we going to get out of here? Don't we need to get help?"
I said, "Yeah, if these things are planning on an overnight visit, we gotta go. I think the only way out is the bus, though. We can't walk with those things hunting us out there."
"I don't know how to drive," said Robin.
And of course she didn't. We were 12. I said,
"We'll figure it out, but we need the keys."
"Hopefully none of the counselors had them," Robin said, leaving out the "before they got swallowed by an alien" part. Daylight was quickly abandoning us. Having never driven anything bigger than a go-kart, I didn't want to have to learn to drive a school bus in the dark. I suggested we look for the keys in Sue's cabin. It seemed the most logical place to stash them. The problem? Sue's cabin happened to be the furthest building from the chow hall, besides the outhouses. "There's no reason for us both to risk it," I told Robin. "I'll run over there. You watch from the window to see if I make it. If I find the keys and the coast is clear, I'll wave to you. Then you run and meet me at the bus, okay?" The way she bit her lip and squeezed her eyes shut told me it was far from okay, but she accepted the plan nonetheless. Only after I opened the door and took a cautious step outside did I begin to wonder, should I prioritize speed or stealth? I knew some predators used varying combinations of senses to locate prey, but what did the weird skeletons prefer? Sight? Sound? And what about their weirder slug monster counterparts? If either of them relied on smell, I assumed my sweat had probably already tripped their radars. I chose a stealthy jog as an in-between option. Only a golden edge of sunlight lit my path. Fortunately, in the wide-open campground, I didn't have to worry about one of those things lunging out from behind a tree and grabbing me. Sue left her cabin unlocked. It was probably a safety thing, since she kept most of the first aid and such in there. I slipped in and instantly saw the bus keys sparkling on a hook right by the door. I grabbed them and held them in the air, flashing dusky sunlight toward the chow hall. I watched Robin carefully creep out. She pointed questioningly toward the painted green school bus a dozen yards from my position. I nodded.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We met at the school bus, and I forced the door open. This caused a metallic grating which almost sent both of us sprinting back to the chow hall. Robin would have left me there for sure if I hadn't already gotten the door open wide enough for her to slip through. With a second damning squeal, I slammed the door shut.
"They heard that, right? No way they didn't hear that,"
Robin spewed in utter panic. She had her hands on top of her head and could not stop pacing up and down between the rows of seats. I ignored her,
instead studying the foreign controls in front of me. There were three pedals, which was one more than the racing simulators at the arcade I had been hoping might have prepared me for this moment. The ball-ended lever, I assumed to be the gear shift, did not have any labels on it. I assumed it was in park now, or neutral, I think I once heard somebody say. But which direction was go?
And don't you dare start that big loud engine if you don't know how to drive this thing, Robin scolded, coming from behind me and trying to steal the keys out of my hand.
Hey, I shouted. I was just figuring out, you know, what I need to adjust to, yeah.
Robin crouched a little, like she suddenly just remembered we were being hunted. She whispered,
Do you know if you can drive this thing or not?
I answered by not answering. Robin began to say,
Okay, then we're going back to...
I grabbed her gracelessly by the back of the head and yanked her to the floor.
Quiet, quiet,
I whisper shouted against her protests. My heart, that's what I remember the most, my heart hammering the inside of my chest. I truly thought I might die from that alone. What had caused my heart to beat so furiously and to attack my friend so rudely was a tall form I had seen in the distance behind the bus. I had only caught a brief glimpse of it through the emergency door in the back, but had no doubt it was looking at the bus. One of the monsters had found us. I whispered this to Robin, who looked as if she might melt through the floor.
What do we do?
She asked, her previous confidence totally absent.
We can't outrun it, can we?
I asked.
She said, I don't know, and what if there's more than one out there?
That settled it. We could not leave the bus, so that left only one option. Hide. I almost took a row in the dead center of the bus since I wasn't sure which direction the creature or creatures would enter from. I mean, they could have come through the windows or roof for all I knew. Who's to say they even knew what a door was? But I didn't take the middle because Robin beat me to it. I didn't want to be close to her. If it found one of us, well, I didn't want us both to suffer. God, that sounds so selfish now. I do believe the door's grating sound is what brought the monsters to us. And yes, there were two, after all. They came up from the back of the bus, slowly working their way toward the front along the outside. They spoke to each other, I think, in a language sort of like Chinese with clicking and popping noises added in. They were trying to find a way in. I think they were smart enough to know whatever made the sound they heard was what we used to enter the bus. I hid beneath a row of seats near the back so I couldn't see them, but I heard them tapping on the windows, reaching up into the wheel wells, and yanking on the mirrors. My heart, somehow, kept accelerating. I wondered just how fast it could beat before it simply burst. I wondered how Robin was doing. I didn't have any way to check on her. I felt a responsibility to protect her, not because she was Dante's girlfriend, but because I was the reason she was curled up underneath those seats. She may have lived a long life, never ever hearing about Camp Morgan, if I had not needed Dante to come so badly. And okay, Dante could have not made the ultimatum about only going if Robin went, but Dante was gone. He couldn't absorb his fair share of the responsibility. Ignoring her own personal sovereignty, I burdened myself with Robin's fate. And boy, was it a heavy load in that big green cage in those moments of helpless terror. I heard the door rattle as one of the hunters struck it. The door didn't open, but I'm sure the monster that hit it felt its flimsiness. The entire bus rocked as the monster tried to pry the door open. Their voices escalated into frenzied chortling. Lying two rows from the emergency door, I considered attempting to flee to the chow hall. There were knives there, knives and fire, but I imagined one of those things catching me and abandoned the idea. I don't think I could have left Robin anyway. They finally pried the door open. I could hear their excitement when it made the grating noise which had first attracted them to the bus. One of them entered. Only one could fit. The second stood guard outside. I could see the thing's head between seats as I cowered on the floor, holding my breath. I expected to see one of the skeletal monsters, but what I saw standing there illuminated a fascinatingly horrible fact about the aliens. Indeed, one of the skeleton creatures stood at the front of the bus, but it was wearing one of the slug monsters, like skin. The former acted as a true skeleton, providing structure and strength. The two creatures were one being. The slug monster detached from its skeleton at the front of the bus. While the skeleton stood watchfully, the slug sloughed to the floor and began to search. Robin lay six rows deep, only four rows ahead of me. I felt in my pocket for anything, a quarter, a pebble, a pen, that I could throw to distract the monster away. But Robin panicked before I could act. With an awful scream, she scrambled out from under her row and charged toward me. She ran toward the back of the bus. The skeleton chattered angrily at the slug. The slug caught one of Robin's feet and she fell hard to the floor. Her head smacked the ground mere inches from my feet, and she lay still. I choked back a scream as my heart reached what I felt must be its maximum velocity. Robin, either unconscious or in shock, twitched, then slid backwards. In 6-inch intervals, the slug thing pulled her in, absorbing her. Then the skeleton came forward. If I was going to be spotted, that would have been the moment. The towering beast, forced to stoop by the bus's ceiling, had a perfect line of sight to me between the seats. Fortunately for me, I think the slug possessed most of the symbiotic creature's visual equipment, or maybe the skeleton just couldn't see well in the dark. The two became one again, the slug climbing and attaching itself to the skeleton's long limbs. I could see Robin curled up inside it, hanging from its belly like the monster was pregnant with her. Satisfied they had caught whoever opened the bus door, the aliens left. I couldn't believe it. I still can't. I have a feeling those aliens didn't mean to leave anyone behind, but thanks to dumb luck, or maybe a higher power, I'm still here. I spent the night in the chow hall since it offered the most places to hide and the most equipment to fight back, but the aliens never returned. I heard a loud sound like a gigantic zipper in the middle of the night. My guess is that was them leaving. The next morning, those same forest rangers came to check on us and found only me. I think they believed my story. I mean, what other choice did they have? But that's where the belief stopped. The authorities convinced my parents to have me analyzed by a therapist. The therapist, apparently confused how I could tell such an obviously falsified narrative with perfect conviction, sent me to a psychiatrist who put me on a pill regimen that served two purposes: numbing my brain and giving people an excuse not to believe me. Anytime I brought up aliens after that, my parents always laughed nervously and, like I couldn't hear, said things like, "Oh, that's just the medication talking." So here I am, a grown man now, sharing my story for you all to decide whether or not to believe. I won't be around long enough to see what comes of it. Those things are still out there, and I think my friends are too. They might still be alive. They might be prisoners or research subjects for those horrible creatures. Honestly, with that being the alternative possibility, I hope they're dead. You made it out. Congratulations. If you enjoyed the story, please rate and review this podcast wherever you like to listen. Reviews are the best way to support the podcast and help it grow.
The next best way is to buy merch from thewarningwoods.myshopify.com. The link is also in the description below. If you want more creepy content, follow me on Instagram at The Warning Woods. If you feel ready, meet me here next week for another journey into The Warning Woods. Thank you for listening.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.